On this edition of WBOI's Field Notes, Victoria Jacobson from the Journal-Gazette starts us off with more on Northrop football's hot start, a wild high school soccer game, and the end of the season for the Tin Caps. Then the Tin Caps' own Jaden Taylor chats with us over Zoom to reflect on the year, while looking ahead to Parkview Field's fall and winter schedule as well as next season. We'll close with notes on the Colts, Fever, and more, with a little help from Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton. That's all next on Field Notes. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Zach Bernard. Victoria Jacobson from the Journal-Gazette is here to help us get started as well. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's start with football. You got to see Northrop take on Northside last week, and Northrop is on a hot streak we haven't seen from them in some time.
Yes, so the Bruins are 3-0 for the first time since 1983.
Wow.
Now, there have been some good years in there. There have been some really strong records and playoff runs in between there, but never a 3-0 start. So the Bruins are the last undefeated team in the SAC because they beat Northside, who was the only other SAC team that didn't have a loss in the 2 weeks of non-conference play. And it turned out to be kind of a wild one, which is becoming a little bit of a trend at Spooler this season. They scored the final two touchdowns of the game. It was kind of a back and forth 25-16 victory. There were a lot of penalties, a lot of turnovers, just kind of anything you could want in a high school football game. Northrop came back to win after trailing 10-7 at halftime. It's a pretty big moment for a team that had only won three games combined over the last two seasons.
Hard to believe we're already entering week four action. What are some games we should keep an eye on?
Well, I think we're going to have to stick with Northrop again. The Bruins are going to be at Homestead this week. This is Homestead's first home game of the season, so the Spartans have kind of been road warriors, but this is going to be their first game against a fellow 6A opponent. And both of these teams are 2-1. Homestead got its first SAC victory over Southside last week. And then if we're going to keep it in the SAC, another game that we're kind of looking at is Bishop Dwenger at Carroll. Both of those teams had really easy victories in week one of SAC play, so last week. So Dwenger's coming into this game 2-1. Carroll is 1-2, but they had a really, really tough non-conference slate. So we're kind of excited to see Carroll and Dwenger in their first league challenge of the year.
As established last week, you're kind of on the soccer beat now. This week, you got to cover a girls' matchup between Bishop Dwenger and Concordia. Tell us what you saw there.
I came in kind of expecting that there might be quite a few goals. You know, Bishop Dwenger had no trouble scoring in their first six games of the season. I was not prepared for how much and how fast. You know, the Bishop Dwenger coach was saying that to get revenge over Concordia, who knocked out the Saints in the state tournament last year, they wanted a fast start. They got a nightmare start instead. Concordia scores two goals in the first 5 minutes, one exactly 2 minutes into the game, another within the next 2.5 minutes. So the Saints are in a 2-0 hole. Things are not looking good. And then they're able to flip the switch. So we had three Bishop Dwenger goals within like a 2.5 minute stretch of their own, starting in the 11th minute of the game. Concordia has a 2-0 lead. All of a sudden, Sammy Aslagi and Ella Hine cut that down, tie it. And then all of a sudden, are 13 minutes into the game, up 3-2. So things are a little wild. And that was the end of scoring for the first half. In the second, Ella Hine gets her second goal of the game very early in the second half. And then the Cadets' Corey Brown scores on a penalty kick to make it 4-3. But that is all the scoring that there was for that game. So, again, a very important SAC match. The Saints come from behind, close the early 2-0 hole, and are still undefeated in the SAC, get a little bit of revenge over Concordia, who knocked them out last year. And I think it's just a good learning experience. You have a terrible start to the game, and you know that you can dig your way out. Hopefully they don't put themselves in that position too often from now. But as their coach said, those moments when they're scoring three goals in 2.5 minutes, those are the moments that show you, hey, we are capable of greatness. That's, you know, why they are ranked number 2 in Class 2A in the state right now.
And the Tin Cap season finally came to an end over the weekend on the road against the West Michigan Whitecaps. How did they finish out the year?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a slide towards the end. The Tin Caps do get a win on Saturday, which was the penultimate game of the season. That was pretty much the only bright spot. They lost five of their final six games in that final series at West Michigan, and they lost 11 of their final 12 games of the season. There was that inflection point right around the trade deadline. They had some players who were traded away to other teams as part of the Padres moves at the deadline, and then there were a lot of promotions, which is good. That's what you want, to see these players move on in the system. But after that, it was a real struggle through the rest of the season.
Victoria Jacobson covering all angles of Northeast Indiana sports for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Thanks again for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Staying on the Tin Caps for now, I'm joined by the club's broadcast and media relations manager, Jaden Taylor, over Zoom. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, appreciate you for having me.
So record-wise, the season didn't end the way anyone would have hoped. The roster ended up fairly depleted after the MLB trade deadline. How did the guys who remained handle that?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of turnover that happens at the deadline. I think a lot of the guys, you know, kind of understood that. It comes with being in professional baseball and understanding what the minor league baseball lifestyle is like. There's a lot of movement just day in and day out. And I think, you know, the group kind of understood that and, you know, was just trying to figure things out. There's a lot of players that were new to the high A level and trying to see what high A baseball was like. A couple of players that were just into professional baseball for the first time. So it was a lot of feeling out process for the group. But, you know, there's a lot of players that were, you know, still in there just trying to get reps and trying to be able to go out there and, you know, do the best they can night in and night out. And, you know, hopefully it was growing for a better end of the season, you know, individually for them to be able to get themselves in a good spot for the offseason.
What are some highlights from the season that you guys are carrying with you into the offseason?
Yeah, overall this year, another incredible year in attendance. We were 29th out of 120 minor league teams in terms of attendance. And, you know, we're a high A team, so we're technically one of the smaller markets. And to be able to have such a high attendance, to beat out 11 different AAA teams, to beat out a good amount of AA teams as well in overall attendance this year, it means a lot to, you know, us as an organization, and it's incredible to see so many players that, you know, got to see what Fort Wayne was about, got to see what this community was about, and see what, you know, this fan base really delivers each and every single day, because it's a special fan base. And that was kind of a big thing for a lot of these players and a lot of these coaches, of just realizing, you know, how special this place is and how cool it is to come out here and play baseball with the Fort Wayne Tin Caps uniform on, and how much this community supports the group night in and night out. You know, on the field, there's a lot of good, you know, highlights too. You know, in terms of, you know, the Padres organization as a whole, right, you're looking for just overall player development of getting them better and getting them to the next level. And, you know, we had 20 different players get called up to AA San Antonio this year. We had 11 of those come in the final month of the season. And a lot of players really grew this year to, you know, getting better and putting themselves, you know, kind of in the spotlight a little bit at the minor league ranks. You know, we had two different players in the month this year. Leo DeVries won it in April as a hitter, and then Miguel Mendez won it as the pitcher of the month in July. Garrett Hawkins was an incredible comeback story. Hadn't pitched in 702 days in an organized baseball game, and, you know, came back trying to figure out what his role was going to be, if it was going to be a starter, if it was going to be a reliever, where exactly he would be placed, and ended up having the longest scoreless inning streak in minor league baseball since at least 2005. And it was, you know, a pretty incredible feat for him to put together a season like that. And, you know, there's a lot of other players that had really good years that are, you know, trying to continually rise the ranks through, you know, the Padres system, and, you know, hopefully, you know, make their dream one day of making the big leagues.
Parkview Field doesn't fully shut down for the next few months. What kind of events are planned for the fall and the winter at this point?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be very, very busy. You know, even if the offseason of baseball, doesn't mean it's the offseason of the ballpark. And we got Thompson Tats Fest coming up here in a couple of weeks. And then we start things going right after that, basically, with all of the action that we have for the Holiday Light Show. Coming back for a second year, it was an incredible experience. It was an incredible success last season of being able to have the Holiday Light Show and, you know, kind of making a new holiday tradition in downtown and a place for, you know, people to go, not only just to the ballpark, but, you know, around the area of the ballpark as well during the, you know, winter months. And, you know, it'll be open from November 13th until January 3rd. 44 nights this year. It'll be open for fans and people from the local area to be able to come out. The cool thing too is we got a whole new show. You know, if you came out last year, don't expect the same thing. We're going to have, you know, stuff even bigger and better this year. We have another 1.5 million lights to show out this year. It's a 50% increase in terms of lights this year, along with the entire new show. And the good thing for the fan is that, you know, the cost isn't anymore. It's still the same cost as it was last year. We're not bumping anything up this year. Same basic promotions as we had last season. So it's an easy way to come out, have an affordable way to enjoy the winter holidays and come by the ballpark. And that's going to be a bunch of fun from November 13th until January 3rd for the Holiday Light Show.
It's always a good time. The 2026 season is a long ways away from this point. But what are some things that the Tin Caps are looking forward to next year?
I think the biggest thing is we're happy to have 4th of July back. It was kind of odd this past year with minor league baseball scheduling to, you know, for the first time since Parkview Field opened in 2009 to not have an Independence Day game at home. We were on the road this year for the first time in this ballpark's existence, and we're finally back home this next year. So that's going to be a bunch of fun. We're at home for pretty much every major holiday throughout the season outside of Labor Day. We'll be at home for Memorial Day weekend. We'll be home for Father's Day as well as Mother's Day weekend. And of course, as I mentioned, the 4th of July will be, you know, a bunch of fun to get everything going across the middle of July. And, you know, we start things going on the road, but Parkview Field's opening day for Tin Caps games at home will be April 7th of next year. And it'll be a bunch of fun. On the field wise, I think there's a lot of really good prospects, you know, at the lower levels right now that, you know, could be creeping up. We're not fully sure who we will get, but there's a lot of really good high-end prospects at the single-A level down in Lake Elsinore there in California. And there's a lot of really fun prospects on that team that, you know, if they played well, and they have played well this year, a lot of times, you know, they'll get the bump up to the next level, and that's up here to Fort Wayne. And, you know, if we're able to get, you know, experience of those players, I think next year will be a bunch of fun.
Tin Caps Broadcasting and Media Relations Manager Jaden Taylor joining me over Zoom. Thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Seriously appreciate it, Zach.
I'm taking a victory lap after Daniel Jones' performance for the Colts on Sunday. 22 for 29, that's a 76% completion rate for 272 yards and a touchdown. If you've been listening the last few weeks, you know I've been a believer in what he could do. And that performance bodes very well for the future. Sunday's 33-8 victory over the Dolphins wasn't the only notable occurrence at Lucas Oil Stadium. It happened without one prominent familiar face in attendance, former owner Jim Irsay. He passed away in May at the age of 65. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports during the game, the Colts honored a man many nicknamed the Boss.
At halftime, the team honored Jim Irsay by inducting him into the Indianapolis Colts Ring of Honor. The recognition has been given to former players, coaches, fans, and club officials, including Peyton Manning. Irsay's three daughters and family stood in the center of the field to unveil his honorary jacket, given to Ring of Honor inductees, and a sign with his name placed in the stadium. Curly Irsay Gordon thanked fans for their support after losing their dad.
As much as we will miss our dad, we know he'd want us to look forward, to win games, and to make our horseshoes shine. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
Colts players and head coach all said the win felt more impactful as part of a remembrance for Irsay. I'm Samantha Horton.
We'll find out if the Colts can repeat last week's success against the Broncos on Sunday. It's another home game at Lucas Oil Stadium, and it kicks off at 4:05. In college football, the 2-0 number 12 Hoosiers will host Indiana State Friday night at 6:30. Number 8 Notre Dame has a tougher challenge ahead of them following the bye week. They'll take on number 16 Texas A&M Saturday at 7:30 in their first home game of the season. The Indiana Fever picked up a big victory over the Minnesota Lynx 83-72 on Tuesday night and await their opponent for the WNBA playoffs. Kelsey Mitchell put the finishing touches on a marvelous 2025 season by setting the franchise record for points per game, which is a very cool achievement. Unfortunately, Caitlin Clark announced early this week that she's out for the rest of the year. So we'll see 22 on the floor again in 2026. Their regular season has come to an end, but a few games remain around the league that will determine who they'll play in the playoffs. The WNBA postseason is set to begin Sunday, September 14th. While the start of the Comet season is still a month and change away, there's a fun preseason event happening in the area. On Sunday, October 12th, the Comets will host the Iowa Heartlanders at Trine University's Thunder Ice Arena in Angola. Faceoff will be at 2 in the afternoon. Don't you just love matinee hockey? The venue has a capacity of around 600. Tickets will be distributed on a first-come, first-served basis that day. It's the first home preseason game not held at the Coliseum since 2005. The Comets begin the regular season on the road against the Indy Fuel on Friday, October 17th. Due to renovations at the Coliseum, their first home game won't take place until November 21st. That will be against Bloomington. That's all for Field Notes this week. Field Notes comes out every Thursday. We'll see you next week. I'm Zach Bernard.
Music for Field Notes is produced by Jack Ankenbrook. You can support this podcast anytime at wboi.org/donate. You and I are listening to WBOI.